Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So we're in this spot where, you know, all I keep hearing from people is, Rick, Joe Biden's approval ratings are in the tank. It's terrible. They're terrible. And they're fixated on this to a degree where you go, look, you know, the reason that his approval ratings are down is because, well, guess what? This fight has been going on for all of this time. And look, it shouldn't be. This is something that, you know, Joe Manchin, our modern day Joe Lieberman, this is the position that he's put us in. And ultimately, there's work that's got to be done. And here to share some thoughts on, well, should we pay attention to the approval ratings? Is this something that that needs to be worked on? Is this something that eventually we get past? Is this, you know, something we need to, push forward on? I'm personally not a huge poll guy. I'm saying, you know, it would be great if we could possibly, you know, get what we need pushed through. And here to share some thoughts on that, I've asked Max Burns to come talk with us. Max is a Democratic strategist, also a columnist over at the Daily Beast. Max, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me.
So walk me through this. The approval rating's not great. It looks like we're not getting the Build Back Better plan. Should we be fixed on the approval ratings?
Well, I think this is a really challenging moment because there are people who are using these approval ratings as reason to not go forward on legislation, when really these approval ratings are a sign that we have not delivered on legislation that people really want.
Yep.
And the answer is not to stop work or to keep cutting Build Back Better. The answer is to pass the original package people wanted.
And, you know, the thing that's infuriating to me is I've talked to so many voters recently who say, you know, if I don't get this, or if this isn't in the legislation, if we can't do something on voting rights or on free college or debt forgiveness, I'm staying home next time. And I'm going, you know, kind of the wrong thing to do. But there's part of me that understands that in 2020, that's what they were told. We're going to get this done. You give us the majority. We get some of this stuff done.
Yeah, that's right. Joe Biden made some very big promises about what was coming. I think sort of overestimated in a way his ability to work the Senate on that thin a margin. But this is a bill that, at least as it stands tonight, there's a lot in this to be proud of. It's a historic bill by any measure, and any Democratic administration should be proud to have this stuff so close to being law.
Yeah, I mean, even if Lucy keeps pulling the ball away, there's still a lot in this. And look, I said this the other day. Look, do I want all of the other stuff too? Yeah, we can organize around getting that next time around. We get what we can now. We take the win. We put what we can into place. We make people's lives better, and you run on that.
You do, and there was a point. You know, as a progressive, there was a point in this negotiation process where the Build Back Better bill was not enough, where it was not doing what was promised. But this is a package of legislation that any of these individual things alone, universal pre-K, climate change funding, would be historic. And together, they completely change the game.
Yeah. Now, you know, the first thing I thought when I saw Manchin's press conference, you know, basically wagging his finger at progressives, telling them, well, you better pass the other thing, was, you know, this is why progressives were afraid of, oh, just trust us. You know, we're negotiating in good faith. This, you know, immediately, because I saw Ro Khanna over the weekend saying, yeah, I'm going to vote for this. You know, basically swallowing the hard pill that we now find out is a poison pill.
Yeah, I think you've hit it on the head that there is very little trust anymore. And we saw tonight Joe Manchin saying very plainly that he is happy to vote against this $1.75 trillion Build Back Better plan, a plan that he largely negotiated to look like it currently does. But there doesn't seem to be any sense of who Joe Manchin is actually working for at this point.
Yeah. No, this reminds me of the ACA fight where we let, you know, Max Baucus and Joe Lieberman and Republicans watered down that bill to where we ended up getting, you know, not as much as we should have, and it wasn't as good as I wanted. And then you got the people who watered it down, not even voting for it. I mean, Chuck Grassley, a perfect example, kept watering it down and was never, ever, ever going to vote for it.
Yeah, and what baffles me so much is that this has been held for so long. This was something that Democrats knew would likely help Terry McAuliffe in Virginia, would help Democrats going into 2022. And the longer this is negotiated and cut down, the less positive effect we're going to see from it. And Joe Manchin doesn't have to worry about that in 2022. But you would think, from a party-building standpoint, that the president would certainly be pushing harder to get as much as he could as quickly as possible.
Yeah. Now, I look at this, and Joe Manchin says that he thinks that he's afraid it might be too much. And I'm going, you're in one of the poorest states in the country. I don't know that too much is too much when you're talking about one of the poorest states in the country, Max.
No, that's absolutely right. I mean, 67% of Joe Manchin's constituents support this. Things like universal pre-K and providing health and dental coverage would change their lives. These are people who have made very clear in every forum we've allowed them to speak that they want these things passed. And the only thing that I can think to say is that there are two senators from West Virginia. I would like to see the media pressing Shelley Moore Capito as hard as they press Joe Manchin.
Yeah.
Because these Republicans are largely voting against things even their own voters have said they want.
Yeah, no, I've been saying this for a while. You know, we're focusing on Manchin and Sinema, but there are 50 Republicans. And if we had a functional democracy, you wouldn't need Manchin and Sinema because there would be a handful of reasonable Republicans. But sadly, and I've gone down the list of the 50 Republican senators, there isn't any reason on that side. All of them are, their voting records have shown me that they are far right wing and even more afraid of the even further right wing primary challengers. They're never going to be any help.
And the fact that that is not a broader message from Democrats it sort of surprises me. I mean, we see Mitt Romney, and he's getting this sort of fawning coverage from the media about how funny he was in his Ted Lasso Halloween costume. And here's Mitt Romney at the bipartisan dog costume contest. But Mitt Romney opposes universal pre-K. There are 50,000 children in Utah who lack access to a good preschool. How does he defend that to his voters? Why is that not every question he's receiving?
Max, this is the guy who was beating up on the 47% of working people in this country who don't pay federal income tax because they don't earn enough money to pay federal taxes. He was using them as the punching bag in one of his fundraising dinners. Do you really think he gives a rat's behind about their children? He didn't care about them or their children.
I don't think he cares. What I do think is that if more of his voters realize that he's actively standing in front of something that a majority of them want, that could completely change this dynamic. We've not in any way required these Republicans to play defense on this, and that is a shame because this is a broadly popular set of policies.
Boy, I wish we could have that conversation, but here's my problem. Here's my problem. What I'm stuck with when I hear Republican voters talk, I hear dumb stuff like, let's go, Brandon! I'm going, what is it? Is it stupidity? Is it jingoism? Is it you just want to cause headache and havoc? Because it sounds to me like most Republicans that I see in public don't seem to care about your kids, my kids. They even really care about their own kids.
They don't, and they couldn't tell you what they cared about. Republican values tend to shift based on whatever's coming out of Mar-a-Lago at this rate. We've seen them sort of jump between made-up scandals about Hunter Biden and COVID conspiracy theories, and now, whatever is coming next. But what you won't see is them talking about these issues because they know they can't defend on that. And if Democrats force that discussion, we could find some surprising outcomes in 2022.
I hope so, because here's the thing, and this is what I've been saying. Our media culture has realized the Republicans, they're never going to vote for any of this stuff. And they've gotten a pass. I mean, really, can you look at any of the current U.S. senators who have an R behind their name and go, hey, here's one that would vote for children. Here's one that would vote for granny to get some new chompers. Here's one who thinks that kids should have the ability to go to community college. Here's one that's going to actually do something to make people's lives better. Can you name one of the 50? Because I'm looking at it. I'm looking at Rick Scott, who I think should be in jail. I'm looking at Marco Rubio. Are you kidding me? I'm looking at Richard Burr, who's probably going to be going to jail. None of them.
Not one. And it's a real shame, because the entire reason we've slow played this Build Back Better plan is to indulge this fantasy from Joe Manchin that there are 10 Republicans who are just waiting to support universal pre-K. Yeah. It doesn't matter that they say they aren't. That's the reason for getting nothing done. And at least we're beginning to realize that this has always been just a smoke and mirrors game from him.
Yeah. Now, this week, Chuck Schumer says he's going to be rolling out the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. This is dead on arrival, but he's going to bring it out anyway. I shouldn't say that. Do you think that there's a snowball's chance in you-know-where of this ever passing?
I don't want to say no, but I'll tell you, I don't want to say no because I so deeply want this to pass. It's something that needs to pass. But realistically, you may have 3, maybe 4 Republicans who are willing to cross over and do this, but nothing near what you'd need. And they wouldn't do it for anything near like what that bill looks like right now.
Right.
And anything less is selling out voters we have sworn to protect.
Now, that's just the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act is just to undo what our Supreme Court did. Now, the thing that Manchin had said he was going to get 10 Republicans to vote on, this Freedom to Vote Act, which I got to tell you, has some good stuff in it. There's some things I really like. That didn't have a snowball's chance in passing. I don't see this happening either. So we're in this moment where do you continue to handle Manchin with kid gloves in the hopes that maybe we can carve out some filibuster stuff? Because I'll tell you, between you, me, and the four walls, the voting rights stuff to me is more important than the Build Back Better stuff.
Yeah, the voting rights is everything. Without voting rights secured, the next elections are just successive gains by Republicans who are able to increasingly rig maps in their favor. But I honestly don't see at this point what more you can push Joe Manchin on. He's proven completely unwilling to move. He's proven willing to flirt with leaving the party and becoming an independent. And one thing that we cannot have is a scenario where Mitch McConnell is somehow back as majority leader in the Senate. That would be the apocalyptic scenario.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be a Republican. I've thrown it out a couple of times that, hey, you never know what McConnell has promised him. And you know McConnell is whining and dining and lining up donors for him as we speak. But I don't see Manchin going to the other side, because then he's just the 51st. He is the 51st senator, and he's not the one that he is now.
Yeah, he's instantly the least popular Republican in America.
Yeah. Although, look at West Virginia. Couldn't hurt him there, and there's talk that he wants to run for governor and that all of this is about that, which is kind of weird to me, because wouldn't you have a better chance of winning as governor on a platform of, hey, look at all the bacon I brought home?
Yeah, I think it's always a popular campaign platform to say, I'm the reason your kids are getting an education. I'm the reason you can get your dental care and take care of your grandparents' health. That's a great platform to run on. It's mysterious to me. I don't pretend to know Joe Manchin's future political plans, but if he's doing that, there's certainly a calculus I don't understand.
No, he's got his own agenda, and it could be anything. I've had people say, "Oh, it's because he owns coal stock. His kids own a company. It's part of that." I go, "I don't know. Maybe he's part of it, but there's something above this. To willing to just really tank the Biden presidency and the Democrats' chances in 2022. It better be something better than just a couple of bucks in coal stock. Just my thought. Last question I've got for you. Kind of changing gears. Evidently, the New York Fire Department's got about 2,000 firefighter jobs open now, huh?
Yeah, suddenly there's a big opening. And I'll tell you, it's an absolute shame. And it tells you how far things have gone from the idea that public servants should serve and protect the public. These are men and women who are normally the first on the scene responding to a crisis and trying to help people. And it's a real disappointment for our city that they've chosen to walk out instead of acting to protect their friends and neighbors.
Yeah. Now, I'm seeing stories on both sides. I'm seeing, you know, again, it depends on the source that, you know, a whole bunch of people are, you know, last minute going and getting vaccinated, that they're going, all right, fine. We want to keep our jobs. We'll get vaccinated. And then the other side is, oh, no, they're closing all the fire departments. And there are, you know, thousands of people who are, you know, doing all this stuff. What are we led to believe? Or is it somewhere in the middle?
Well, it depends on what your partisan slant is on your news. The reality is likely to be more muted. I think the relevant number is going to be what are those absentee numbers in a month, because that will give time for two doses and 2 weeks to have come in, and then anyone who's sort of lagging behind will be brought back into active service. So if we see, you know, 70-80% declines in a month, we'll know that this worked. Yeah, they had to be dragged a bit, but it worked. If it's still high in a month, I mean, that's a tough amount of resistance and something we haven't really thought about how to address.
Yeah, and time for us to start, getting some new fire people. I know a bunch of people who had dreams of being a fireman when they were kids.
It's a great job.
It is a great job, and one that, you know, a lot of people I know could never get. So there's some openings. If you ever want to be a fireman, there's openings. And look, you know, in Pennsylvania, they got a lot of volunteer fire departments, people who are qualified and, you know, that they want to move to New York and become a fireman. There's a push forward. But isn't it sad that something like this is what's caused this kind of chaos, and that simply, you know, protecting yourself and others, but more importantly, yourself, has become this kind of political football?
It is sad. And I've, you know, dug through this data throughout this pandemic, and there were a sizable plurality of people that had very reasonable hesitation, resistance to the vaccine, which is the wrong word to use for them. But they, as they got educated, we saw that group decrease. People got vaccinated. Yeah. What you're seeing now is really identity politics. It's anti-vax as a political badge of identification. Yeah. And I don't know how you engage or persuade that group.
Yeah, well, you made your choice. There's the door. Good luck. Max, I appreciate the time. Great stuff. Keep up the great work over there at the Daily Beast. Make sure you check out Max Burns' stuff over at the Daily Beast, where he writes his column. Max, thanks so much. Appreciate the time.
Thank you.
Good stuff. Let's take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Remembering that united we bargain, divided we beg. Rick Smith.